Hi, welcome to this week's program. I'm going to start with a true story that is set in 2006, not too far from the nasty downturn in 08. That's when a client of mine declared to me that he was getting ready to retire next year. He had accumulated enough for retirement, but much of his net worth consisted of his company's stock, actually about two-thirds or so. The shares he held have been pretty volatile over the years, ranging from a low of $20 to its current price of $60 a share, which was the high point of its range. When I asked at what price he would eventually sell, he said he'd sell half at $75 and the other half at $82. Now, with the shares at $65, it didn't appear unreasonable to expect that they could rise to $75 and then $82 over a reasonable period of time. And everything looked great under a rising stock scenario. Moreover, at $65, there was a high probability that the amount of money he had accumulated up to that point would last throughout his lifetime. So, there was no problem with retiring next year. As a matter of fact, he could retire now according to the numbers. Now, just a note, this analysis also assumes specific amount of future savings, an estimated future rate of return, a monthly retirement budget, and a lot of other variables. But what if the stock fell back to 20, which it had hit in the past? Well, then he'd see two-thirds of his assets dramatically reduced, and the numbers showed that at $20 a share, he would not be able to retire now or next year, and in fact, it looked like he'd have to work another 10 years. So with this deeper dive into his plans to retire, the original idea to squeeze some extra bucks out of the stock didn't look so good. Now, do you think his company's stock would be worth holding on to given the risk to his retirement plans? Or would it make more sense to sell the stock now, reinvest the proceeds into a diversified portfolio, perhaps with no more than 5 or 10% allocated to his company's stock as part of a prudent, well-diversified investment strategy? The lesson here is that a company doesn't have to go out of business like an Enron or Lehman Brothers to ruin your future plans. Diversifying out of a heavy position of company stock, especially when nearing retirement, is almost always a sound decision, irrespective of the potential upside of the stock. Now, first, let me point out that employees like buying company stock because they are under what psychologists call an illusion of control. That's where employees feel they know more about what's happening inside their company and feel they have an insider's investing edge that outsiders lack. Companies also incentivize employees to buy shares for less than market prices through stock options and employee stock ownership plans, or ESOPs as they're known. Purchasing company stock at a discount can make a lot of sense, especially if you buy shares at 15% less than market value. And for such plans, I understand if you want to go all in and buy as much as you can. There's also a sense of loyalty in buying company stock. Additionally, we've all heard real-life stories of thousands of employee millionaires at companies like Amazon and Berkshire Hathaway, Facebook, Google, and Microsoft, where even lower-level employees with a few hundred shares make significant amounts of money over a very few short years. And sometimes employees may simply not be aware that they can diversify by changing their asset allocation to a smaller percentage of company stock. In other words, inexperience with investing or the fear of market volatility pushes people towards the comfort and familiarity of their own company and its stock. So there are multiple reasons why employees like buying company stock. But there is such a thing as having too many eggs in one basket, especially with one's investments and retirement savings, because if your company, heaven forbid, gets into trouble, you could be hit by the double whammy of losing your job and watching your investments drop in value. Think Enron and Lehman Brothers, where retirement plans were wiped out and employees found themselves without jobs, a fate that you can avoid if you diversify your investments beyond company stock. Unless you're the CEO or the CFO or someone privy to a company's detailed financial data, you really may not know too deeply into how your company's actually performing. And furthermore, an analysis of real insider buying and selling data shows that even C-level executives are bad predictors of their own stock's future arc. Here's another reason not to drink too much of your own company's Kool-Aid. More than half of all publicly traded companies have not outperformed the return on cash in their lifetimes as publicly traded companies. I'm going to repeat this. More than half of all publicly traded companies have not even outperformed the return on cash as they were a publicly traded company. So even if you love your company, there's less than a 50-50 chance that you'll outperform cash, and much less that it will beat the market. And just as a doctor wouldn't operate on her own child, so it is with your company. When you're too close to it, you may lose the ability to think rationally and may not be able to spot its flaws, especially if you're not in a customer and competitor-facing role. There's also a groupthink issue where you conform to what your coworkers are doing and vice versa, and all of you end up holding more of your company's stock than you should. Add in confirmation bias, which I've discussed several times on this show. It's where you believe in a position and you don't let outside data change those beliefs. So if you strongly believe in your company and you feel your company is strong and competitive, confirmation bias may cause you to dismiss competing views or early alarm bells, and you'll end up holding your company's stock, perhaps even buying more when it's down, only to realize your mistake when it's too late. And with the market having done so well over the past 8 years, those of you who have a big chunk of your portfolio tied up in company stock should seriously consider diversifying. Because most company shares have performed really well over the past year and may drop 10 to 15% in a routine market correction, or even more if things somehow take an ugly turn. So I'd urge you to speak with your financial advisor, weigh your risks, and be open to diversifying beyond your company's stock. Now, some of you may point to Google and Amazon and say, hey, you know, if their employees sold too early, they wouldn't have become millionaires. And I see that. So let me add a caveat. If you're relatively young, have few responsibilities, and work for a promising company that's got a distinct advantage, it may make sense to hold a large percentage of your portfolio in company shares. But as you age, raise a family, have to pay for a house, save for college, and your own retirement, consider paring back on your allocations so you spread your risk. Now, it may be emotionally difficult to sell most of your company stock, so it's okay to maintain a reasonable position of no more than 5 to 10% of your total portfolio in company shares, provided your company is a leader in its field. But if your company is a laggard, then even 10% may be too much and could border on being reckless. There are lots of ways to stay true to your company, but putting your family's finances at risk isn't one of them. So you may be better off biting the bullet, selling most of your company's stock, and diversifying your portfolio. Are you anxious about your financial future? Have you ever made money decisions you've regretted and then repeated the same mistake again? Or perhaps you avoid talking about money altogether? Life is unpredictable, but your decisions don't have to be. And knowing where you stand and having an ongoing action plan will help you get where you want to go. So when you understand that the cornerstone of success is in making good decisions coupled with deliberate action, you can start on the road to ensuring that you're investing the way you should and feel good that you're taking care of yourself and your family in the best possible way. And you know, this has been the mission of the Steve Pomerantz Show from the very beginning. So once again, I want to remind you that you can ask us anything on your mind financially by visiting stevepomerantz.com. And if you have more serious concerns or questions, I'll personally take the time to get back to you to help you find a solution. I've been helping people do just that for 35 years, helping them get ready for retirement, save for a house or college, and so many of life's turning points. So once again, go to stevepomerantz.com and click on Contact. That's stevepomerantz.com.
Investment advisory services are offered through United Capital Financial Advisors, a registered investment advisor. United Capital and the Steve Pomerantz Show are separate and unrelated companies.
You're listening to The Steve Pomerantz Show. Peter Greenberg is a multiple Emmy-winning investigative reporter and producer, and he is one of the most recognized and respected frontline travel news journalists. He hosts the public television show The Travel Detective with Peter Greenberg. It's a series that empowers audiences with travel news, must-have information, insider tips known only to a select few. And he also produces and co-hosts the acclaimed PBS television special The Royal Tour, featuring personal one-on-one journeys through countries with their heads of state. Peter Greenberg, welcome to the show.
Happy to be with you.
You know, I'm currently preparing for a trip to Sicily, and I saw your piece, How to Interpret the News When Planning Your Vacation, The Truth and the Fiction. Give us some tips for reading between the headlines before we travel.
Well, you know, it's all about the information you get and then how you put it in context. And one of my biggest pet peeves is with U.S. State Department advisories, because if you look at the history of the advisories, you know, 30 or 40 years ago, you had advisories that were specifically targeted to individual destinations or cities or countries that were either in conflict or that were, you know, basically dangerous or were at war or were just tough travel spots. Well, about a year ago, the State Department decided they wanted to basically streamline the process, expand the advisories, and now there's a State Department advisory for every single country in the world. That's like 196 separate advisories. But they've broken it down into four different categories, and here's where it gets confusing, here's where it could be misguided, and certainly here's where it could be misleading. Category one, travel with normal caution. I have no idea what that means.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
Travel category number two, travel with increased caution. At this point, you're digging a hole in the backyard.
Yeah.
Category number three, reconsider travel. At this point, you're putting plywood on your windows.
Uh-huh.
And category four, which is the big bad one, which most Americans mistakenly think is a rule, law, or a regulation, and it's not, is do not travel. So let me give you an example of how this gets misapplied. In the last year, there have been four separate states in Mexico that have had either a Category 2, 3, or 4 designation as an advisory from the State Department, and Americans get scared and don't go.
Mm-hmm.
The one that was particularly problematic to me was the state of Sinaloa had a Category 4, right? Do not travel.
Yeah.
And you take a look at the map, well, what's in Sinaloa? Mazatlan. Mazatlan's great.
Mm-hmm.
No problemo. And yet they get painted with the same broad brush. So you need additional sources of information to be able to make intelligent travel choices so you can know where you're going to go reasonably safe and actually have a great experience. So my advice is I'm not telling people not to read the advisories. No, do it. But now read the other advisories from the British Foreign Office. You can get them online.
Oh.
See what the British government is doing to give their own citizens advice as to where they want to go anywhere in the world, and see if that matches. And then last but not least, once you figure out a destination you want to go to, my advice is do this. Go online to the local newspapers in those cities, see what stories they're covering. What are they putting on their front page? And if those stories don't scare you, guess what? You're going to go. And 96% of the time, that's exactly what you're going to do.
Wow, pretty interesting. You know, I've been living in South Florida for a very long time. And in the 80s, it was, well, you know, a lot of news reports about drug issues and killings and those types of things. And then Miami Vice, the TV show, came out and it was like, nobody should go to Miami. It's so dangerous. And when you live in the area, you don't really feel it or see it. This is not really what life is like.
No, I'm still a fan of Crockett and Tubbs. Come on. But the thing is this, you know, you mentioned you're going to Sicily. There will be, I mean, if you take a look at some of the State Department advisories and you read the language, you know what the State Department advisory was for Indonesia? It was, stay away from large crowds and avoid buses.
Oh, God.
You know what?
Yeah.
I live in L.A. and I stay away from large crowds and I avoid buses. And the reason for that is I have no idea where the buses go. And that's true terrorism when you don't know where the buses go.
Yeah, right.
But so you need to get those three sources of information.
Yeah.
And in an overwhelming number of cases, you're going to have a great time and you're going to go. My metric is really where I wouldn't go. And how do I determine that? Who's not in control? If I want to go to a place and no one's in control, I'm not going.
Yeah.
So would I go to Iran? Yeah, I know it's in control. Would I go to North Korea? Absolutely, I know it's in control. Would I go to Syria? No, I don't know who's in control.
Right.
Would I go to parts of Yemen? No, I don't know who's in control. But, you know, in about another 30 seconds, I will have run out of places not to go.
Mm-hmm.
That's how few there are.
All right, let's get to the mundane aspect of this. What are some safety tips that every smart traveler should know and use?
Well, there's personal safety, there's medical safety. I mean, you're going to laugh. The one thing I always pack in every one of my bags, duct tape. You're going to laugh, but it fixes everything. It fixes everything. I carry with me two separate phones. I carry with me photocopies of all my documents put in separate bags. Because if you lose something, you don't want to lose the record of it in the bag that you lost. And basic common sense, you don't want to pack all your clothes in one bag. Spread it out to two bags. Mm-hmm. So if the airline does what airlines do, loses your bag, you're not clothesless. And just basic common sense. And then last but not least, never take a no from somebody who's not empowered to give you a yes in the first place. You know, the first person you talk to is usually only empowered to tell you no. Uh-huh. That doesn't help anything.
Yeah.
So go up the ladder in a non-adversarial way. Find the person who can give you a yes. And by the way, if they give you a no, you really know it's a no. Mm-hmm. But if they give you a yes, you just scored.
Why two phones?
Well, two phones for two reasons. Two phones with two different services, because you can't always get a signal with one service. Mm-hmm. That's number one. And number two, I don't know about you, but my iPhone batteries die every 6 minutes.
Yeah, true.
You know, so I got to have a backup.
I gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So what are some of the top destinations for this fall as the weather seems to cool? Maybe it's time for a good 2 week jaunt somewhere. What areas do you like at this current time?
Well, I sort of back into it another way. I go where the U.S. dollar is the strongest.
Oh.
And for the first time in recent memory, the U.S. dollar is pretty strong.
Mm-hmm.
Look at Argentina right now. Argentina, they've devalued their peso so much against the dollar that the U.S. dollar now has seven times the buying power it had only 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Wow.
The British pound is down about 18% against the dollar. The euro is down about 20% against the U.S. dollar. The Thai baht, I mentioned Mexico before, great bargains in Mexico with the Mexican peso. This is the time to do it. It's a buyer's market.
What about Turkey?
You know what? That's the hidden gem. You know, Turkey's had a lot of problems politically, and as a result, a lot of tour companies pulled out. Cruise ships stopped going there because they couldn't get insurance. But I'm going to flip it around. I've been in Turkey four or five times in the last 2 years. No problems whatsoever. I went to South Sophia or the Blue Mosque, and guess what? I'm the only guy there. What a great experience.
Yeah,
oh,
right.
My God.
Right.
Never felt unsafe. Never felt in danger. And the good news is the cruise lines are now starting to come back. The tour groups are now starting to come back. So if you want to go, go before everybody gets there. Yeah. You'll be much better off.
All right. So we don't have that much time. What are some of the best sources for people to use as they're researching their trip? I mean, there are a zillion sites. Everybody's got an opinion. Everybody who's been to a place once or twice is now an expert online, especially if they can write at all.
Yeah.
So what are some of the sites that you like to go to?
Well, I'll give you one which is going to be the most self-serving answer you'll ever get today. That's mine.
Okay.
So PeterGreenberg.com.
PeterGreenberg.com.
Yeah, because we're not transactional. We're not selling anything. We're informational. We update every 24 hours because of one very important fact. Travel is news.
All right. Can you give us some others?
Well, the other sites are really sites outside the U.S., because I don't want to go to a transactional site. I don't want to be steered anywhere.
Yeah.
I don't want to be sold anything. I want to know that I'm really getting bona fide information from a trusted source. And in fact, if you go to my website, we list those other websites. I have no financial affiliation with any of them, but that'll help you out a lot.
Very good. My guest, Peter Greenberg, are you still currently creating new episodes for The Travel Detective?
Absolutely. We're going into season 6, and we're about to start our 17th year on the Royal Tour. So stay tuned.
Congratulations. You can find more about Peter at petergreenberg.com. And don't forget to remember to visit our website, stevepomerantz.com, to join the conversation, listen or read all of our segments. And while you're there, sign up for our weekly update for the important topics we've covered, including petergreenberg.com's web address. Go straight to your inbox. That's stevepomerantz.com. Thanks, Peter, for joining us.
Anytime, man.
StevePomerantz.com now features each week's show in shareable individual segments. Busy at work and want to come back to the show later? No problem. Every segment has a full summary of what was discussed, along with a transcription of the interview. You can read or listen to one of my commentaries. Hey, is there something I mentioned on air you want to find on our site? Well, you can search for it. So check it out and let us know what you think. We'd love to hear your thoughts on what you liked or what you didn't. You can request topics you want us to talk about and ask us questions. We'll get back to you, promise. And you can like us on Facebook, where you'll find out about upcoming events and subscribe to our podcast. It's all there at stevepomerantz.com. That's Steve, PomerantZ.com. Yeah. This is the Steve Pomerantz Show, and I'm Steve Pomerantz. For those of us in hurricane tracking territory, especially here in South Florida, watching Hurricane Florence devastate Wilmington, North Carolina, and the surrounding areas was a big wake-up call. So it's time to talk about what we need to do in advance of any hurricane which might hit our shores. Kim Langford is the contributing editor at Kiplinger's Personal Finance, and she's going to help us focus our attention on the hurricane season as it plays out. Hi, Kim. Welcome back.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You know, we all saw the effect of Hurricane Florence this month, and it looks like hurricane season might be active this year. Let's talk about what we can all do to protect ourselves. Number one, I guess you have to secure your home. Let's talk about how to do that.
Well, and that is right. And it really depends on what kind of time frame you have. I mean, on the long, long-term scale, you know, especially people in Florida, whenever you're replacing your roof, really think about all of the things that can help protect your home from hurricanes. And in fact, in Florida, people can get special insurance discounts for using a lot of hurricane protection steps when they're replacing their roof, when they're replacing their windows, and many other things kind of on a long-term home improvement side. But now that we're in hurricane season, and if you have just a few weeks or even a few days before a hurricane, there's still a few things you can do. For example, some of the hurricane experts say that a really key thing to do is close your interior doors. And that just helps the wind from getting around in your house and, you know, eventually blowing off your roof. They found in all of their research that that simple step can make a big difference. If you have a little bit more time, you can end up, you know, boarding up some of the windows or even just looking in your attic and seeing if any light is coming through and knowing that those are some things that are some cracks that you can seal up with caulk or some adhesive. And some of those things can just really help protect your home, even at the last minute.
Yeah.
Another key thing is trimming trees. Anything you can do to trim some of those branches, because they can go flying around, become projectiles, and then just cause a lot of damages that may not be covered by your insurance.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things that you said there. I thought it was really interesting about going up in your attic, with a flashlight, or during the day, so you can see if there's any, see if there's any water stains. That's number one. That would be something to look for. And then, of course, if you can see daylight in your attic, that's not a good sign. You know, you're going to want to get that fixed right away. So you want to caulk or seal around doors and windows. The interesting thing about closing your doors, because there is some mythology here, I think, with tornadoes as to whether you're supposed to keep your doors. There's some event that is the door thing, but I always thought keeping your doors closed inside was just a myth. But you're saying no, because the air pressure in the house, if it gets to go throughout all the house, then could lift off your roof, right?
That's exactly right. And the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety, their website is disastersafety.org. Their CEO was just telling me that they've been doing a lot of studies about this recently and found out that it really does make a difference. That's one of the key pieces of advice they're giving to people. Even if they have just a day or so or even a few hours before the hurricane hits, That's a simple, simple thing they can do. And another thing is disastersafety.org, their website, and also flash.org, which is the Federal Alliance for Safe Homes. Both of those have a lot of really great step-by-step advice for protecting your home from hurricanes. And you also mentioned tornadoes. They also have a lot of advice for protecting against tornadoes and other types of disasters, because some of the steps can be different.
We'll list those websites on our website, which is stevepomerantz.com. And so if Kim spoke too quickly, and I could not write that fast either, we'll get together with Kim after the segment and make sure to put those up. Now, the state of Florida would have a website. FEMA would probably have a website as well, right?
That is correct. And these government resources really have a lot of information. In North Carolina, for example, you know, right before Hurricane Florence, the North Carolina Department of Public Safety put up a page devoted to preparing for Hurricane Florence. And they had the Ready NC app, which a lot of states have an app like that, that can provide all kinds of really localized information about disasters. You can sign up for disaster alerts. It can also help you find out where there are some mobile claims units. For example, FEMA and the state disaster agencies, usually after a hurricane, set up places where you can go in person and meet with them about some of your issues, because in many cases, you know, cell systems may be down.
Yeah.
You may not be able to access your phone, and you can go in person and find out from them about things you can do to apply for aid, things you can do to protect your home, and your insurance company may be there as well. Also, find out from your insurance company ahead of time if there is a disaster predicted, you know, the best way to reach them. A lot of insurers have apps now as well where you can start to submit your claim through your cell phone. And if your home is in a situation where you can actually access it afterwards, if you weren't evacuated, go around with your phone, take a video, take pictures right afterwards so they can see what the damages were. And you might be able to upload those onto that app to your insurance company right away, get you in line to get that claim paid.
Yeah. So that also brings up the point about videoing or taking pictures of your valuables before the hurricane and then uploading them to some site that is in the cloud, that's not attached only to the memory on your phone or the storage on your phone. Also, I want to get back into some of these more simple things too, as far as clearing the yard. I mean, getting the dead limbs out of the way and even your patio furniture. Used to be years ago, people threw their patio furniture into the pool. Is that something recommended?
You know, that's one of the people at one of the disaster preparation organizations said people still do that, and that can still help. The key thing is all of these things that are out in your yard could become projectiles during a big windstorm. And so think about whether it's your furniture, whether it's, you know, even just, you know, potted plants, any sculptures you have out there. Just think about what you can do to make sure that they're not going to go flying away. Mm-hmm. Also, another key thing is cleaning your gutters. You know, a simple thing will make it, you know, so the rain will drain where it's supposed to go. And also just see where that's draining. Make sure that it's draining away from your house and not kind of pooling right there, because that could cause a lot of problems too.
Yeah, so it's a question of using common sense and focusing. Some other ideas here are pack an emergency kit. You know, it's not unusual for electricity to be out for a while. Let's see, flashlights, batteries, a phone that plugs into the wall. What is that, I wonder?
I know that back in the old days, before everyone had their cell phones and even just your regular phone that you're on for your landline, a lot of people have a handset that is powered by electricity. And so if the electricity goes out, they can't even access their landline. So think about one of those old phones that just actually plugs into the wall, not that you can, you know, walk around your house with, but just plugs into the wall. Have that just so you can access that if you need to. And another thing is ATMs. You know, a lot of times, and I've talked with a lot of people after Hurricane Harvey and Hurricane Katrina, were just a long time with the electricity was out in their area, ATMs were inaccessible. And so just have some extra cash on hand if it's difficult to get some cash or if it's difficult to get somewhere. In fact, if you have some damages, you may have to pay someone, you know, right away. It may need to, you know, pay someone in cash immediately.
Yeah.
That also brings up the issue to be careful about who you get to work on some damages because some people do prey upon people after disasters. So try to work with people you've already had a relationship with to help patch up your house after disaster.
So many of us remember that type of situation back in Wilma in 2005, not being able to get any money because the ATMs, there was no electricity for many, many weeks. As a matter of fact, interestingly, unfortunately, we had a family member that was in the hospital. They had full power and they had an ATM down in the lobby. So that was able to take care of that. The other thing too is make sure that you get your gas tank filled beforehand. You don't think about these things, but if the electricity is down and gas stations are not necessarily going to be able to pump gas for you, so you want to have a full tank. I want to talk about things to know about insurance claims. You know, I think there's a lot of misinformation and misunderstanding about flood insurance. Tell us about that really quickly.
Well, and that is, you know, so many people I think really learned after Hurricane Harvey last year that flooding is not covered under your homeowner's insurance. And so, you know, if it's wind-driven rain or water that comes in from the top down or, you know, wind damage, those things are covered by home insurance. But water that's coming up from the bottom up is not covered. And there's several ways you can get coverage. For years and years, you know, the main game in town was FEMA's National Flood Insurance Program. And you can go to floodsmart.gov, find out about those policies. And your homeowner's insurance agent, most of them also sell those policies. But in many states, and Florida is one of the leaders in this area, there's many more private insurers offering flood insurance as well. And this is offering some competition to the federal program. In some areas, the private insurance can cost less. In some areas, it can cost more than the federal program. So it's really a good idea to talk with your insurance agent and find out if they sell both types of policies and compare what those costs are. Another key thing with the private policies is you can get coverage up to the amount of your homeowner's insurance in many cases. as opposed to some much lower limits that you'd have under the federal program. So it's really a good idea to check it out. And in Florida, people do have a lot more private flood insurance options than they do in many other states.
Mm-hmm. Also, don't forget that your policy will probably have a hurricane deductible of 2% to 5% before you get your first dollar back. So don't be surprised about that. Well, we're out of time. My guest, Kim Langford, contributing editor at Kiplinger's Personal Finance, and we're talking about hurricanes. And we will list all the websites that she mentioned on our website. So remember to visit our website, stevepomerantz.com, to join the conversation and listen and read all of our segments. While you're there, sign up for our weekly update for all the important topics that we've covered straight into your inbox. That's stevepomerantz.com. Thanks, Kim.
Thanks you very much.
Little boxes on the hillside, little boxes made of ticky-tacky, little boxes on the hillside, little boxes all the same. There's a pink one and a green one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky and they all look just the same.
This is the Steve Pomerantz Show, and I'm Steve Pomerantz. It's time for Real Estate Roundup. This is the time every single week we get together with noted real estate agent Terry Story. Terry is a 30-year veteran with Keller Williams located in Boca Raton, Florida. Welcome back to the show, Terry.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
30 years. Congratulations.
Yay.
Wow.
Okay. Still doing it. Still liking it.
Well, that's more important. Getting to the current news, this is important. August housing starts were up 9.2%. And housing permits were down 5.7%. We're going to get to that in a minute. But there was a big surprise that housing starts were up 9.2%. That's good news, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We need new construction. We need new houses. We need more inventory. So this is excellent.
Right.
Good news.
Drilling down a little deeper. However,
I already know where this goes.
Most of that increase was for multifamily housing, rentals. That could also include condos and the like.
Right.
But only 1.9% increase in
single family homes.
Yeah,
so that's not much for the single family homes.
I know.
If you want to move to multifamily property, we've got plenty of it coming. Stay tuned.
Well, you know, they just keep building those rental properties.
Yeah.
Right? Because they must be profitable, but at some time they're going to be overbuilt.
And then they'll just convert them to condos.
Yeah.
And then they'll switch them back.
You're so cynical.
It's true.
However, housing permits were down 5.7%. That's not good.
No, that's telling you that they see things are flattening a little bit. The cost of the land, labor, materials is rising.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of a pullback there.
Something about a pullback. And, you know, maybe tariffs have had a little bit to do with this because of rising lumber prices and things like that. The labor shortage that you just mentioned.
Yep.
You know, it's hard to find people who want to be plumbers and electricians and carpenters.
I'll tell you, you can make a lot of money. I know some very wealthy plumbers.
Mm-hmm. Well, they own the plumbing company.
I know. But you didn't own the plumbing company without being the plumber.
Well, you got to start somewhere.
You start at the bottom.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And also land prices have risen as well.
I just had a plumbing problem and the guy came out and I saw how high that bill was. I'm like, I should become a plumber.
That's probably a sign of the top of the real estate market when you're starting to complain about your plumber's costs. All right, so let's move on here. We've talked about this before, but older homeowners are delaying downsizing. They're not moving. The idea is, the meme is, you have your house for your children, you bring up your family, it's nice and big.
Yep.
Family moves out, and after a while, then you...
Family moves back.
Okay, well, let me finish my part first, and then you already said the punchline. But the bottom line is basically that there's this idea that's just the two of you, and you're going to now downsize into something smaller and something more affordable.
Right.
If you built up equity over those years, you can take out that excess equity now because you're you bought
travel.
You can do all those things that you dream about.
Yep.
But then something happened, and the kids moved back.
They moved back.
Yeah. What do you mean?
Well, it's very common. And this is a true scenario. The senior people are trying to move out and they've got their grown children moving back in. You know, the average age now of people downsizing is 80.
Wow.
Now they're working longer, so they don't need the finance assistance. So they're just staying where they're at.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they make it really cushy and the kids come back.
And I've got no more comment on that. I think it speaks for itself.
Yeah.
All right. So that idea has changed then. You know, people hit age 65, age 70, they move and so on, but that's now being delayed.
It's being delayed. It's closer to 80. Mm-hmm. Here's the problem. Now you have the millennials clashing with the seniors, and they're all fighting for the
smaller
homes. So you've got investors, first-time home buyers, and seniors all fighting for, you know, that $300,000 home in our area.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's why they're building more multifamily housing.
That could be.
Okay.
To accommodate this.
So you can buy a decent place for
$300,000.
You can buy two of them. All right. Okay. So another very interesting fact is that homes in 8 states have lost billions in potential value based upon rising sea levels, rising river levels, rain, and so on. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so you're looking at $14.1 billion in lost values, according to a new study. And that's high. And $7.4 billion in home value appreciation was swept away just in 5 states. Of course, Florida always leads the pack in almost every category.
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking at Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Virginia. But interestingly enough, Steve, in the tri-county states, which is New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, they lost $7 billion.
Just for those three.
Yeah. And then at the same time, then you look at, speaking of New Jersey, Ocean City, New Jersey, they lost $530 million versus Miami Beach, for example, which was more like $337.
I think the point here is that you expect it from Florida because Florida is known for weather and high seas at times. And hurricanes, of course, but you don't really expect it in Connecticut.
Right.
And that's the difference.
And the difference is their real estate values are so much greater than ours.
Yeah.
So that's why the numbers are higher in those states.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, so it's making a case. You know, it's interesting because the bottom line really should be whether the insurance companies are charging more or not. I don't know the answer to that.
Right.
But I mean, that's really where you can see how the statistics really work. Because the insurance companies are going to price their premiums based upon where you live and what the risks are. So watch out if you're living in this tri-state area now, right?
Yep.
Because we all know that. Okay. Another change that we're seeing is that people are checking on their financing first before they come and see you, the realtor.
So smart. We've always preached that when somebody comes to us, first thing we do is put them in touch with a lender. A lot of them now are doing it on their own. They've finally got the message. This is what we need to do first. So by doing that, they're fully aware of, you know, what their costs are going to be, what they can afford. So it makes the shopping experience a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
When you look for a home that's in your price budget, then you won't be disappointed when you look at something that's more expensive that you can't afford. And now you really want that, but you can't afford it. So
okay. Why does the realtor show that property first?
It's a strategy.
I know it is. I know. It's called anchoring. We'll get into that in another episode. Unfortunately, we are out of time. My guest, as always, is Terry Story, a 30-year veteran with Keller Williams, located in Boca Raton, and she can be found at terrystory.com. Thanks, Terry.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Are there any topics we're missing, guests we haven't thought of that you'd like on the show, questions you want answered? Contact us anytime at stevepomeranz.com. That's Steve, P-O-M-E-R-A-N-Z.com. Simply go to stevepomeranz.com and click Contact to write us anytime, anywhere. Articles on the site you liked or didn't? Want to share your 2 cents? Comment on any of our guest interviews and tell us. You know, this show's purpose is to empower and protect you on all things financial. We'd love to hear your feedback so we can make sure we're getting you the information you need to live your one best financial life. Contact us at any time at stevepomeranz.com. That's Steve, P-O-M-E-R-A-N-Z.com.
You're listening to The Steve Pomeranz Show.
Here's a fact. About 1 in 5 women fall into poverty as a result of divorce. About 1 in 3 women who own a home and have children at home lose their homes. Men can also experience difficulty as well, Most men experience a loss in their standard of living in the years after a divorce, a loss generally between 10 and 40% depending on circumstances. So, we're going to talk today about the financial impact of divorce and discover smarter ways to handle this particular life crisis. So, I've invited Angie Hallier, a practicing divorce lawyer and a certified family law specialist. She is AV rated by Martindale Hubbell and authors a divorce education column. And she has a new book, The Wiser Divorce: Positive Strategies for Your Next Best Life, where she lays out a better way to handle this important and possibly expensive life-changing decision. Really, Angie, it was a great book. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Steve. So glad to be talking to you.
You know, divorce is a life crisis in many ways. What is it about divorce that can create so much destruction and problems well into the future?
Well, you know, the number one thing is how people handle their emotions during the divorce. And we all know that divorce, you know, it gets a bad rap. It has this reputation for being a very expensive battle. And what makes it a very expensive battle when it is one is how people monitor their speaking, their actions, and their attitudes. And when they employ the right strategies for those things, it doesn't have to be a battle, and it doesn't have to be as expensive.
It used to be, I don't know, maybe even just 30 years ago, that in order to get a divorce, someone had to be at fault, and it was never spoken about in polite company, and it was kind of a shameful action. And, you know, the whole idea of divorce, though, has changed over the years. And you write in your book, I thought this was really quite interesting, that when it comes to getting married, the law treats us like grown-ups and trusts us to figure it out. But when it comes to divorce, the courts traditionally have the final say. How did it end up that way?
Well, you know, part of it is just the way people looked at divorce, again, as a battle. It's a lawsuit. And, you know, unfortunately, that's how you have to do it. Somebody has to sue somebody. Someone has to respond, and many times you ended up in front of the judge because the old mindset, and the old mindset of attorneys was, you know, you go to court, you get your answers.
Mm-hmm.
So many things have changed today. There are so many different ways that people can go about ending this legal contract of marriage that don't require that.
So divorce, if it's a battleground that's going to be fought in the courts, someone's got to win and someone's got to lose, right?
Well, that's the myth. But that's not true. And one of the things we talk about in the book is how, you know, there really isn't a supreme commander of justice. People think if they go to court, they will be declared right, or they will get their revenge, or someone will just declare who's good and who's evil. And it's simply not the case. Judges are human like the rest of us. And when you trust your destiny in the hands of someone who may only see you for 3 hours
mm-hmm.
and who you're asking to decide the outcome of a 20-year marriage, you're not going to end up with what you want. And that's one of the key things to saving money in your divorce, is being smart about the process you use to end it.
You spend a chapter discussing the life of the average judge. You know, as laypeople, we may go to court and we think, you know, he's really listening to my side of the story and able to really express and, you know, maybe ranting and raving a little bit, but he'll get me because I've been so unjustly treated. But, you know, the judge is sitting there. Just give us a quick idea of what the judge's day might be like.
Right. So if you're a divorce judge, all day long, day in, day out, you see people come before you who are arguing about things that, you know what, grown-ups normally wouldn't argue about. Whether your child can be in soccer, who's going to get the $50 savings account, things that just to the outside world, you can't imagine they're being asked to decide. Intimate things about your life.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's not enough for them. They have a pile of paperwork where everybody is arguing back and forth and back and forth. So they become, you know, they get really jaded. And even if you come before them and they think, wow, you're really sympathetic, they're restrained by the law as to what they can order and what they can't order. So, you know, they have very little time. They only hear the very relevant parts. They don't hear what a dirty scoundrel your soon-to-be ex is. And they're human. So put that all together and you get, you know, maybe not the best outcome.
My guest is Angie Hallier. She is a practicing divorce lawyer and the author of The Wiser Divorce: Positive Strategies for Your Next Best Life. I have read it and I do recommend it if you're going through this situation or contemplating it. It's an important book to read. Angie, though, you talk about setting aside emotion. You know, that's so easy to say, but hard to do, especially if you feel that you've been shamed or something the spouse has done that has hurt your feelings. It's very, very hard to put those emotions aside. What can we actually do? What are some first steps that a person can take to start to pull themselves together so they have the right outcome?
So one of the things I suggest is that you envision your divorce as a series of rooms. Because what I want people to do is be able to come into the divorce room, that room where you're actually just ending that contract, and put their emotions in another room, because those emotions aren't going to go away. But when you mix up your rooms and walk around all the rooms while you're trying to divide your assets and debts, and talking about your children, that's when it gets confusing. So envision that when you're with your attorney, when you're making decisions about your financial future, you're not mixing it up with these other emotions, because you're going to have them. You know, the other thing I talk about is it really is like setting up a business. The matter of your divorce is a business. If you were starting a business, you would plan, you would execute, you would wisely spend your money, you would set goals. You need to do the same thing for that process of your divorce. The other thing is I mentioned using scripts. Training yourself to speak about your divorce in a certain way triggers your brain starting to think about it in a certain way. So I've got some advice in the book for using scripts as well. And then lastly, I mean, really sit down and do some worksheets about this. And we have that in the book as well. Think about what is the good you're going to take forward from your divorce, because I guarantee you there was some. Think about what things you never want to take forward that you had during your divorce. You know, what you didn't like that you're just going to lose and forget about. And then think about what those unfulfilled things are that you have inside you. Maybe it's time you wanted to spend with certain people you didn't, or experiences you want to have, and just focus on what that future can be, and that will really help.
I think a lot of people feel that settling in certain areas of the divorce, they're looking for a sense of fairness, and I'm going to give an example that you gave in the book. So often one party runs up a significant amount of debt without any consultation with the other spouse, so they just start using the credit cards and they build up debt. The spouse is perhaps unaware of it. And then in the divorce, the spouse has to assume his or her portion of the debt in divorce, and that just doesn't seem fair. Is achieving fairness truly the ultimate goal?
You know, you want people to be able to hold their head up when they're done and say, you know what, this was an outcome I can live with. But fair doesn't really exist in the law. Nothing is fair. I mean, if we go back, you think, hey, it was never fair. I fell in love with this guy or gal to begin with. So you need to change that thinking from fairness to what I can live with to gracefully end this marriage.
Mm-hmm. So I guess it's quite important to find the right attorney for this wiser divorce. How do you go about finding this person?
Right. And it's the right attorney for you because, you know, there are a lot of good attorneys out there. It's just like doctors. There's great doctors. There's not so good doctors. The same with attorneys. You need to find an attorney that immediately puts you at ease and makes you feel that they have your back. You need to find the attorney who's in the right price range for you because, you know, there's all hourly rates when you're looking at attorneys. If you have a simple case, you don't need the number one attorney in town. And if you have a very complicated case, you may need multiple attorneys working on your case. You have to consider all of those things. And for me, what makes the best attorney is what I think makes the best doctor. If you go to a doctor with a problem and they say, here's what you have, take this pill 5 times a week, come back and see me, you know, that's not really the best thing. You want a doctor that says, here's what I've identified you have. Here are the 4 options for treatment. Here is what you could expect from each option. And here is the option I recommend. And here's what you need to do your part in the treatment. That's what makes a good divorce attorney. So you need to look for someone like that.
You know, you write in the book that there's 10 ways to wise up about divorce. And I've listed them out here. So allow me to list them and you can explain. So number one is hire the right attorney. We've talked about that. Number two, which seems quite obvious, but I know in the emotion of the moment, this often does not take place. Number two is put your kids first.
Yes, absolutely. You know, it is amazing because so many people come in and say, now listen, my children are my number one priority. And then they act in ways that make it clear they're not their number one priority. You have this obligation as a parent, quite honestly, no matter what age your kids are, to shield them from the litigation, to not let them be involved, to not guilt them, to not engage them in the battle, to not see you drowning in sorrow, to protect them and keep them safe. and to co-parent with the other parent, so that's what they see. And it's hard for people because, you know, there are so many emotions and they do feel maybe so angry at the other parent.
Yeah.
But, you know, people that really love their children will do things and go to the ends of the earth for them. And divorce is a really important time to do that.
It takes a lot of self-control to not rag on your soon-to-be ex with the children and say, you know, he did this or she did that. I mean, that I can tell you want to say it. It takes a lot of self-control to stop that. Number three here is prioritize your goals. That sounds so kind of businesslike and cold, but explain it with regards to divorce.
Right. So, you know, we always look at what will happen if you do have to have a judge decide things. And a judge can't prioritize what's most important to you. Maybe you want your house, but maybe you also want a certain amount of child support. You know, which one is more important to you? When you settle your case, you can prioritize and focus on those number one goals for you because you're going to have, you know, 10, 20 maybe decisions to make to end this legal contract of marriage. Mm-hmm. So if you look at settlement, you have the opportunity to see what's really what's most important to you, prioritize that, and make sure you get those gains.
You know, one listing here that I really liked, which was subtle, but I think it's actually pretty important, is understand your settlement options. So, you know, we tend to think a possibility of thinking that, you know, that you can kind of get the moon. But if you know kind of what your settlement options are, you know the parameters and what you can operate and then what to expect, I think it would be easier to make decisions.
It's absolutely easier to make decisions. And that's what a good attorney will do. They will outline for you what probably your best and worst case scenario is at court, what the likely outcome is, and also define those confines within which a judge must order things. A settlement gives you so many opportunities for creativity that are not available. Just as an example, you know, most judges in states will give you spousal maintenance for a certain number of months, if you're entitled to it, in a certain amount. Judges don't have the ability to lump sum that forward. When we're looking at a settlement about maintenance, many times I've settled cases where we decide we're going to give significantly more assets and or cash to a spouse who's entitled to maintenance right up front, so they have the flexibility to use that money as they want, and so that the other adult doesn't have to keep writing them checks every month. That's an example of what you can do when you settle instead of go to court.
Yeah, and also the receiving spouse doesn't have to kind of be waiting for the check every month and have to maybe change her or his, you know, attitude towards the ex-spouse. And it helps to get on with your life if you can just, you know, give a lump sum and just cut the cord. We don't have all the time in the world. My guest is Angie Hallier. She wrote The Wiser Divorce, Positive Strategies for Your Next Best Life. Number nine here is follow your attorney's advice. It's listed, follow your attorney's advice, follow your attorney's advice, follow your attorney's advice. What are you trying to say?
Follow your attorney's advice is kind of what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
But it is amazing. You know, people pay their attorneys all this money and they rely on them. And when they do not follow their attorney's advice, they're making a mistake because, you know, like me, I have been through thousands of divorces. I know how things you do now play out in the end. So even if it doesn't make sense to you now, listen to me.
We have about 2 minutes left, and I just want to get to some of the kind of the end thoughts here because, again, it's all in the book. But to you, Angie, what is a perfect divorce and how would you achieve it in about a minute and a half?
Right. So the perfect divorce is one where you come out at the end of your divorce and you know what your plan is for the future. You know where you're going to go. You know how much money you have and you haven't spent excess money you shouldn't spend during the process and you have it to live your next best life.
Yeah. And that's really the key. It can turn into a financial nightmare, and you want to, like everything else in your life, start to take control of your finances. And in a situation where it can be so devastating when you're making these life choice decisions, by far, you want to be very careful and very smart when it comes to divorce. If this is going to be a win-lose situation, if you're going to go to court and rack up all these bills, you have to really think, what are we going to have left after this whole process is over and done with? What is left for me to live my one best life? My guest is Angie Hallier, and that is spelled H-A-L-L-I-E-R. And she can be found at AngieHallier.com. Angie, thank you so much for sharing your time.
Thank you, Steve, so much.
Are you anxious about your financial future? Have you ever made money decisions you've regretted and then repeated the same mistake again? Or perhaps you avoid talking about money altogether? Life is unpredictable, but your decisions don't have to be. And knowing where you stand and having an ongoing action plan will help you get where you want to go. So when you understand that the cornerstone of success is in making good decisions coupled with deliberate action, you can start on the road to ensuring that you're investing the way you should and feel good that you're taking care of yourself and your family in the best possible way. And you know, this has been the mission of the Steve Pomerantz Show from the very beginning. So once again, I want to remind you that you can ask us anything on your mind financially by visiting stevepomerantz.com. And if you have more serious concerns or questions, I'll personally take the time to get back to you to help you find a solution. I've been helping people do just that for 35 years, helping them get ready for retirement, save for a house or college, and so many of life's turning points. So once again, go to stevepomerantz.com and click on Contact. That's stevepomerantz.com.
Investment advisory services are offered through United Capital Financial Advisors, a registered investment advisor. United Capital and the Steve Pomerantz Show are separate and unrelated companies.
I'd like to take a moment to thank all the people involved in the making of this show. Senior producer Erica Stamolo, engineer Brian Zykowitz, senior editor Carol Melzone, and John Sova, who handles our digital platform, and of course, finally, contributor Terry Story. Any interviewee's appearance on the Steve Pomerantz Show does not represent any endorsement or confer any opinion whatsoever, either positive or negative, by The Steve Pomerantz Show or any media by which The Steve Pomerantz Show is distributed. Thank you so much for joining us.
Investing involves risk, and listeners should carefully consider their own investment objectives and never rely on any single chart, graph, or marketing piece to make decisions. The radio show is intended for informational purposes only, is not a recommendation to buy or sell any securities, and should not be considered tax, legal, investment advice. Please contact your tax, legal, financial professional with questions about your specific needs and circumstances. The information in the show is obtained from sources believed to be reliable. However, their accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed. All data are driven from publicly available information and has not been independently verified by United Capital. Neither United Capital nor any of its affiliates makes any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this recording, and any liability as a result of this recording is expressly disclaimed. This recording should not be relied upon to evaluate any potential transaction. United Capital is not giving tax, legal, investment advice by means of this recording, and this recording does not establish a client relationship with United Capital.